So today we're going to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, and we're looking at Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, and we're on verse 28 to 29. So what I'll do is I'll just recite that verse 28, and then we can go on to 29. Translation. Then also, when the cowherd boys and their animals drank the poisoned water of the river Yamuna, and after the Lord in his childhood revived them by his merciful glance just to purify the water of the river Yamuna, he jumped into it as if playing and chastised the venomous Galia snake, which was lurking there, its tongue emitting waves of poison. Who can perform such Herculean tasks but the Supreme Lord? Okay, so now we're going to go into text 29. Okay. On the very night of the day of the chastisement of the Kaliya snake, when the inhabitants of Rajbhumi were sleeping carefreely, there was a forest fire ablaze due to dry leaves, and it appeared that all the inhabitants were sure to meet their death. But the Lord, along with Balaram, saved them simply by closing his eyes. Such are the superhuman activities of the Lord. Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. Although in this verse the Lord's activity has been described as superhuman, it should be noted that the Lord's activities are always superhuman, and that distinguishes Him from the ordinary living being. Uprooting a gigantic banyan or Arjuna tree and extinguishing a blazing forest fire simply by closing one's eyes are certainly impossible by any kind of human endeavor. But not only are these activities amazing to hear, but in fact all other activities of the Lord, whatever he may do, are all superhuman, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4:9. Whoever knows the superhuman activities of the Lord, due to their very transcendental nature, becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of Krishna. And as such, after quitting this present material body, the knower of the transcendental activities of the Lord goes back home, back to Godhead. Tatkarma divyam ivayan nishini shayanam davag nina shuchivane paridha yamane unneshyati vrajamato vasitantakalam netre pidhapya sabalo nadigamya vidyaha. On the very night of the day of the chastisement of the Kaliya snake, when the inhabitants of Rajbhumi were sleeping carefreely, there was a forest fire ablaze due to dry leaves, and it appeared that all the inhabitants were sure to meet their death. But the Lord, along with Balaram, served them simply by closing his eyes. Such are the superhuman activities of the Lord. So, this week we've had some amazing classes by various speakers. So, a lot of the points that they would have probably covered, they already covered, which I would have tried to formulate from this. We'll try to share some words here. I remember when I was younger, there used to be this, there was this film called The Neverending Story, right? In my generation, some of you may know it, Neverending Story. And it's like the boy would like open the book, and then he'd be transported into the pastime. He'd lose any awareness of the world that he's in, and he'd be in the adventure himself, like he's one of the characters in the pastime itself. So when we look at this, especially Prabhupada's purports here, Prabhupada is very much emphasizing that we need to know Krishna's pastimes, all of his pastime, because they're all actually superhuman. And therefore, why knowing this, as Bhagavad Gita 4:9 says, we actually will get transported to Krishna's realm after quitting this present material body. So, there's a famous verse in the Gita, Janma karma che me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha takta deham punar janma neti mamiti sarjuna. Right? One who knows the transcendental nature of my activities and pastimes does not take birth again in this material world, O Arjun, right? So all these activities are superhuman. They are also, in the Isha Upanishad, is described that all these activities are described as antiseptic and prophylactic, right? Meaning that they will cure us. They'll, whatever material contamination we have, they will actually cure us of that. And they will also destroy any further material contamination that may come into our consciousness. So this is really what our bodies are meant to be used for. It's to actually hear and serve Krishna. It's to hear the pastimes of Krishna and to serve Krishna. In fact, in the third canto, chapter 25, verse 32, it actually says that the mind is the leader of the senses. And the actual function of the mind is actually meant to serve, right? We often, you know, we talk about the mind control, the mind is taking us, the mind conquers us, and how to control the mind. But actually, the mind's natural position is to serve, actually, right? And all these senses are the representations of the demigods, right? The senses are the representation of the demigods, and the mind is the representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the demigods, as we know, their function is also to serve Krishna. The mind's function is all to serve Krishna. Everything is meant to serve the Lord, right? In fact, sir, the verse goes on to say that serving Krishna is even better than salvation. So in every situation, we must always look at how are we actually connecting with Krishna. In fact, I know some of you, there's a few of us, a few of the devotees here on the Veda course. And a couple of days ago, we were talking about the golden rule of bhakti. Does anyone here know what is that? I mean, there are many, many, like, you know, wonderful verses to, like, you know, signify what is bhakti and, you know, what's the best way of encapsulating what is bhakti. You know, we have verses like Sarvabhadi Vinirmuktam from Nectar of Devotion, things like that. But there is one verse from the Padma Purana which is known as the golden rule of bhakti. Doesn't even know what it is. Yes, that's right. Yes, so it's Smartavya Satatam Vishnur Vismurtavya Na Jatuchit Sarve Vidini Sedasur Etayor Eva Kinkara. This is saying that, you know, Lord Vishnu, I'm paraphrasing a little here, but Lord Vishnu is the ultimate. Always remember him. Always remember Krishna. Never forget him. All other rules and regulations are subservient to this one principle. So that means that everything we do in life, every kind of activity, we should actually look at how is this helping me to remember Krishna and never forget him. And even in our preaching, whatever preaching we do, we have to look at how is this helping others to remember Krishna and never forget him. That should be the guiding principle of our lives, as per that golden rule. Okay? So we can see that choosing Krishna and choosing his pastimes is always the wisest decision to make. Even if it may seem that, you know, what is the point? Why am I looking into these pastimes? How are these pastimes going to help me? But we have to have that shraddha first, that actually these pastimes are going to elevate our consciousness. They're going to give realizations to us beyond what we dreamed of. We know in the Mahabharata, before, you know, Mahabharata, there was the big war, the Kurukshetra war. And before the war started, when the Pandavas and the Kauravas were canvassing for allies, they were going around, you know, like looking for different powerful people to be on their side. And on the Kaurava side, you had Shakuni, right? So he's the evil uncle of the Kauravas. And then he says to Duryodhan, listen, you go and you get Krishna on our side. Now, Duryodhan never liked Krishna, obviously, because, you know, Krishna was always favoring the Pandavas, and he tended to put a spanner in most of Duryodhan's plans and things like that. So he didn't actually want to do it, and he never really appreciated Krishna, you know. This is an interesting point, actually. He never appreciated Krishna, even though Krishna's right in front of him, right? So it's one thing for us to say, where is Krishna? But we have to first make the step to actually want to know Krishna, right? To actually really appreciate who he is. Duryodhana was living with Krishna, like, you know, in that same pastime for so long. But, you know, if you don't want to know Krishna, he could be right in front of you and he will still give you the intelligence by which you don't have to remember him, right? In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, verse 15, it says, Mata Shmitir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. He will give you remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So if you really want to forget him, he will give you all the logical arguments that you need to not want to believe in Krishna, right? I mean, this is very much indicative of the society we live in now as well. Anyhow, Duryodhan would then find, he reluctantly said, okay, fine, I'll speak to Krishna and, you know, see that I can, you know, try and get him on our side. And obviously, I'm sure some of you know this pastime. At the same time, Arjun also went to actually get Krishna for his side. And it's interesting, even when they come into the room, Krishna is actually sleeping on his bed. And Duryodhan comes first, and then Arjun comes afterwards, doesn't even know where they sat. Yeah, so where did Duryodhan sit? He sat at Krishna's head. Right? And Arjun immediately went to Krishna's feet. So that just shows you the mood that he has. That he's already like, that's why they see, even when we take darshan, ideally, I must say, I should practice this as well myself more, but it says that you should take darshan from the feet and going upwards and then finally to Krishna's head. Not that you go straight to Krishna's head, right? Because we're not on that level yet. We should have that appreciation first. That's why Prabhupada is saying here, all of Krishna, everything that he does is superhuman, right? So Duryodhan's at the head, Arjun's at the feet, and so naturally then Krishna then gives the choice, and he gives the choice that, okay, you have two choices here. Number one, either, because there's two of you and I can't be on both your sides, so either you have me personally on your side, but I'm not going to fight in this war at all, right? I can support you, you know, assist you, and obviously, as we know, he became Arjuna's charioteer, but I'm not going to fight myself. Or you can have my team, he had his own personal army of mercenaries, considered one of the best like regiments in the world, right? And then what did Duryodhan do? He immediately felt that, okay, this is it, I'm going to go for the mercenaries. In fact, if I remember correctly, he didn't even wait for Arjun to actually come in and things like that. And then actually Krishna was the one who said to Arjun, no, let the younger cousin go first. And Arjun, what was his response? He said, Krishna, I just want you. That's all I want. I don't want your regiments or your resources or facilities. All I want is you, right? And Duryodhan afterwards actually thinking, this Arjun is such a fool, you know. Made the wrong decision. He just went for Krishna, and Krishna's not even going to fight for him. Whereas I actually got the right, you know, deal here. You know, I got Krishna's regiment here. Oh, this is it, you know. So this is the difference between the material consciousness and the spiritual consciousness. Material consciousness meaning that we always put emphasis on ability, on resources, on facilities. We use our own intelligence to think, okay, what is the right course of action to do? And sometimes it may seem materially, how is this going to work? Like, you know, whereas the spiritual consciousness is, no matter what the odds are, I'm always going to go for Krishna. And knowing and having that faith that no matter what happens, if I'm on the Krishna side, then ultimately victory will be with me. Sometimes I guess we also maybe feel like the way, even like with Krishna consciousness, you know, like we're all in ISKCON right now. We're trying to push forward the movement, and you know, for those of you involved in like, services and stuff, sometimes you think, like, how on earth are we going to, like, you know, like, help to spread this movement? Like, everything around us, the whole society is, like, completely going in a different way. I remember, actually, many years ago, without embarrassing him too much, Jay Krishna Prabhu was telling me that when they first started, they were thinking that they're going to make the world Krishna conscious, like, you know, like, overnight. And then he's like, over the years, he's thinking, my God, have we even made a dent in this material world, right? Sometimes we may feel like that. But you know, if we are on Krishna's side, if we have faith in what Krishna and his words, then we have to know that no matter, somehow or another, even if it defies logic, Krishna will make things work for us. Who would have thought that Srila Prabhupada, you know, in his elderly years, would then one person go, you know, like there's this, from like India all the way to America, and then spread this whole movement. One person. And he wasn't even like a big, big personality within the Gaudiya Math. He was actually like one of, like, he was there, he was a devoted member, but he wasn't like one of the biggest speakers or the biggest, most powerful, sort of personalities there. But he did it because he had that faith in Krishna. So we know that But to have that faith in Krishna, we need to dive into his pastimes. We need to immerse ourselves. It's said that we know that, you know, our three main scriptures is Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's said that the Bhagavad Gita is the words of Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the activities of Krishna, which is really what this verse is talking about today. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the mind of Krishna. So the most esoteric. Like, which book talks about the mind of God himself? And it's interesting, actually, when you look at the trajectory of the Krishna conscious journey, when you first come and you look at the Gita, the first instructions in the Gita is basically like, okay, dehinusmin yatha dehe komaram yovanam jara, right? Okay, you are not the body, you're the soul. You are not the body. Prabhupada keeps saying that, right? You are not the body. Why can you not understand this simple fact? You are not the body. And then as you progress, right, in the Bhagavad Gita, then it comes to like the end of the Bhagavad Gita, and it's like, okay, give up your duties and just surrender to Krishna. It went from like, you're not the body or the soul, right? This is like often like, you know, when like marathons coming up, what do we generally talk to people on the street? Yeah, this is about the soul, it's about consciousness. We don't really talk about, okay, this book, take this book, chant and be happy, surrender to Krishna. Or take the Veda book, surrender to Krishna. Some people may do that actually, but the whole idea is that when we talk about basic stuff, it's about soul, it's about karma, you know, things like that. Like spirituality, you know, we keep it quite broad and like, you know, the guy on the street, well, okay, fine, I'll check it out, you know. But like, then you come to the end of the Bhagavad Gita and it's basically saying, Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam rajaja, sharanam raja, right? That you give up all your duties and just surrender unto me. Don't worry, don't fear. Masucha. And then you look at Srimad Bhagavatam, it basically starts from when Bhagavad Gita finishes. Bhagavad Gita starts, what's the second verse? Dharma projita kaita vatra paramo nirmat saranam sata. Veda vasta atra vastu sivadam trapattayon mulanam. Right? So, give up dharma projita kaitava. Give up all dharma. Give up all dharma and take to this Krishna consciousness. Right? It's basically saying give up all other forms of Vedic rituals, dharmas, duties, all forms of religions, philosophies, tattva, everything. And then you go to the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the last verse, and it's talking about Sankirtan. It's going from giving up all varieties of dharma, and finally you dive into the holy names of the Lord. Right? And holy names mean holy names plus his pastimes. And then from there you got to the third book, which is Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Chaitanya Charitamrita starts with Mahaprabhu, right? He says, E mata bhakti bhav kari angikar, apani charite bhakti karile prachar. Right? It goes from Sankirtan. Now Krishna is going to teach us, how do we do Sankirtan? How do we do it? I'm going to show the mankind how we do it. Apani bhakti charite korile prachar. I'm going to show how to do the prachar. I'm going to show how to do bhakti, right? Using his own examples. And then at the end of it, right, what's the conclusion? Kiba mantra dile goshai, kiba tava bal, japite japite mantra korile pagal, right? Kiba mantra dile goshai, what goshai, oh goshai, what mantra have you given me? What kind of power? Kiba taba bal, what kind of power does this mantra have? Japite japite mantra korile pagal, right? This mantra I'm chanting, right? And it's making me go mad, pagal, right? So this is the culmination of our Krishna consciousness. We want to go mad on Krishna's names and his pastimes. Right? Every morning we sing, right? Shri Radhika Madhavayora Para Madhura Lila Gunarupa Nam Nam. Right? So through the Nam, through the names, we get Krishna's qualities. And through the qualities, no. Through the name, we get Krishna's form, Rupa. And then from the form, we get Krishna's Guna, his qualities. And then we get his Leela. And then through the Leela, we go mad in the Madhura. We go mad in the love. Right? So this is the whole point. And if we can attain to that state, we can go mad on Krishna's love and loving, and by immersing ourselves in his Leelas, then there, that's it. After that, no going back. We're not going to come back to this material world again. I mean, that's the essential point of Krishna consciousness, right? Break the cycle of birth and death, go back to Krishna. So this is very, very important for us to actually know his pastimes, to actually immerse ourselves in his pastimes. Yesterday, Srinivas Prabhu was saying in the class as well how in many, sort of spiritual kind of thoughts, traditions, for them, God is, just this something in the cloud, or like this big person sitting on some throne in the sky. And then God is like a father, like we go to, we ask for things. We have to go deeper than that. We know Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this based on verse in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam. There are different approaches by which we can approach Krishna. Does anyone know what the four approaches are? I'll give you a clue. One of them's out of fear. So there's fear. Does anyone know what the other ones are? Okay, yeah, that's from the verse, but there's another one that Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically mentions. Fear. Well, okay, fear, then there's desire, then there's duty, and then there's love. People approach God out of fear, desire, duty, or love. And we know that fear, like they did a survey at the end of the Second World War in Germany. They found that church attendance had plummeted. So the authorities, they did a survey. Why has church attendance gone down so much? And then they looked around and they found that the biggest demographic that has actually decreased in church attendance was middle-aged German ladies. So why do you think that was such a big dip in that demographic for going to church after the Second World War? Absolutely. They basically, if you look at a lot of men died in that war, right? A lot of the German men, husbands died. So the women then became widows. So then because of that, they actually lost their faith. Now, of course, we're not here to judge or anything like that because they went through their tragedies. But the whole point is that if you're coming to God out of desire or to fear or even to alleviate your fear, fair enough. There's nothing wrong with coming to Krishna because of that. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo udaradi. Whether you have no desires or many desires, the fact that you're coming to Krishna in itself is good. But we have to go deeper than that as well. Because otherwise, if our relationship with God is just based on fear or desire, like Krishna, please do this for me. I'll keep coming to you, but please do this for me. Then, Krishna will give you what you need. Doesn't always give you what you want. So then if he doesn't give you what you want all the time, then what? Does that mean that, okay, your relationship with Krishna is done now? Look, I can't really worship you anymore because you're not giving me what I want, So we have to then come to that stage of going beyond approaching Krishna with fear or desire. Then, of course, we've got duty. Okay? Duty, desire is also like wanting things from Krishna. Like if you look at Duryodhan went to Krishna. And in the beginning of the Mahabharata war. But his mood was desire. I want Krishna because I want this stuff from him. I want his expertise. I want his skills, right? And that's why when Krishna said, oh, you can get my resources. Fine, I'll take that. That's fine for me. Thank you very much, right? But then we have to go beyond that. Then you've got duty, right? So duty is like considered a bit more higher. That regardless of what is my need or want, I am fixed on worshipping Krishna. And this is a matter of principle for me, and I'm going to stick by it, which is very admirable, In one sense, when we join Krishna consciousness and we're doing sadhana bhakti, then there is a very much strong sense of duty to be done. Krishna even says to Arjuna in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, right? Do your duty. I mean, at the end he says, give up your duties. But in the initial stage, he says, do your dharma. Do your dharma, but for me. It's the same way. When we join Krishna consciousness, we often talk about, you know, nowadays we talk a lot about varnashram. What's your nature? What's your varna? What's your ashram? What should I do? How should I situate myself? Should I be in a sudra occupation? Am I vaishya? Should I make money for Krishna and be outside and give what I can? And then, you know, dovetail my nature and all this kind of stuff, right? That's all there. That's all part of the duty aspect, right? It's all good. But then we come to a stage where actually even your duty can end up binding you. It can actually end up becoming, if you're not careful, your duty, even your seva, can actually end up becoming a trap for you, where you actually identify so much with your duty and the seva without actually seeing what Krishna wants from you. That's why, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, they have a yoga ladder where, you know, when you first do your duty for Krishna, your karma for Krishna, it's sakam karma yoga, right? You're doing your duty for Krishna, but with some desire for yourself. Then you go to nishkam karma yoga, where you're doing your duty for Krishna without any desire for the results for yourself, but you are attached to the activity itself. You're attached to that seva. Like if someone says to you that, oh, I want to do something else, like, you know, Prajna Prabhu, our temple commander, well, you know, at least when I was here, Prabhuji used to be our temple commander, and, you know, imagine, like, I'm singing in front of the deities, and then Prajna Prabhu comes and says, no, I need you to clean the toilet. And I might be singing for the deities, for their pleasure, but I'm like, no, I don't want to clean the toilet, I want to sing for Krishna. So that's like almost like a nishkarma example there, where I'm doing it for Krishna, but I want to do it in this way, I don't want to do it in that way. But then we go beyond that, ananya bhakti. This is love, where we approach Krishna and we do whatever it is that Krishna wants us to do. And then obviously for that, we immerse ourselves. But for that love to happen, we have to experience that love. Rupa Goswami actually says that the best way for a person to develop conviction in the Krishna consciousness is actually through personal realization. More than the scriptures, it's more when you're actually experiencing the pastime yourself. Right? When you can actually dive into the Madhura Leela and accessing that level. Okay. So we're almost coming up to time. We have examples of this as well, you know, when they get so deeply into the pastimes, they can actually completely lose themselves, where the material world around them doesn't actually matter anymore. You know, they don't get affected by the ups and downs. I was laughing actually this morning because yesterday I heard that we don't have a prime minister right now or something, right? So like, I know a lot of people outside might be thinking, what's going on? Oh my God, we don't have a leader, this and that, and the country's going to the dogs and this and that. But I was thinking, like, you know what? Since I came to Krishna Khan, I used to be really into, like, I used to follow politics. I found it quite fascinating. I used to read the Times newspaper and all that kind of stuff. And now it's like, I'm actually so detached from politics, like, my wife actually had to remind me the other day who the Prime Minister of Britain was. Like, I know that sounds terrible. I should be more clued up. But at the same time, I'm not like feeling ashamed of it, because I feel like, you know, as you get more and more into Krishna consciousness, you find that a lot of the things outside, they don't have as much relevance for you. They don't impact you. They don't emotionally like hit you like they would do before, you know? I think that's a good thing, personally. I think if we can dive deep more into the pastimes and just get our enjoyment from this, the less external things will matter. I know there's a financial crisis going on. I know, you know, petrol prices are rising and, you know, and all the rest of it. And maybe a lot of people would be freaking out. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be conscious of these and live life properly and be sensible. But at the same time, they don't impact as much as they would do before. In fact, His Holiness Karma Kanamar says that, you know, it's not that devotees don't go through their obstacles. They do. Devotees go through their pains and illnesses and things. But what you'll find the devotees, even if they're going extending through pain, internally they're not actually getting hit by it so much, because they really are like, you know, like focused on Krishna and the pastimes. Whereas a person who's not in the kind of immersed in the pastimes will get more affected by these things, you know? So, yeah, so these things are there. And we have examples, obviously, of famous devotees who got so immersed in the pastimes, they actually ended up, like, getting highly emotionally affected, but transcendentally emotionally affected. So one example is the You know, when Mahaprabhu went to South India, and, you know, he met that Brahmana who was completely devastated, on the point of suicide. Doesn't even know why. I'll give you a clue. It's related to Ramayana. Yes, he got so devastated that Ravana kidnapped Sita. How could Sita Devi be touched by Ravana, right? Obviously, then Mahaprabhu gave the actual tattva that actually it wasn't Sita who got touched. It was Maya Sita. The real Sita never ever gets touched by anyone but Lord Ram. Always is with Lord Ram. You know, that's a highly philosophical conversation that they had, right? And then similarly, does anyone know any other examples of like devotees who got so immersed in their pastimes where they actually start to lose awareness of the external world or don't get affected by it so much? Okay, Raghunath, yeah, go on. Elaborate. Oh, and then his hand got burnt, the finger. Yeah, is that, was that Raghunath Das Goswami? I think that was someone, I can't remember who that personality was. I don't know if one of the seniors knows. Anyway, I know which pastime you're talking about. Yes, there's the famous pastime with the burning kid. Yeah, but I know which one you're talking about. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's Raghunath Das Goswami, but I can't remember off the top of my head. There's also another one, actually. You know, there's a famous king in South India called King Kulashekar. Everyone's heard of him. And he was also a massive Ram Bhakta. And he got so much into the Lord Ram pastime that, you know, and he got so like angry about Ravana kidnapping Sita. Now, bearing in mind that the Ramayana happened like thousands of years before. And still, he got so into it that he actually rushed out of his palace and started actually running into the ocean on the, you know, the South India to try and cross the ocean to basically help Lord Ram to get Sita back. And actually his ministers had to actually stop him and say, no, you don't understand. It's fine. Sita's been rescued. It's all good. And he was like, oh, thank God for that. Thank Lord Ram, you know. And he got so into it. And it wasn't madness. It was transcendental madness. In fact, he became a very great scholar. He wrote one of our main Vaishnava scriptures, the Mukundamala Stotra, right? So this is the sort of level of immersion that we want to aspire to in our lives as we progress, yeah? So anyway, I'm conscious of the time. I'll stop there. Probably I'll take one, maybe, yeah. Oh, sorry, Mike, yeah.
I think one of the Goswamis, if someone mentions Radharani's name, he just goes into ecstatic trance. I can't remember which Goswami it was, but yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you know, they say that the Goswamis, you know, that when they're in Vrindavan, they spend a different night under a tree. And Keshav Maharaj actually mentions this, that it's not because of austerity that they're doing it. It's because they're visualizing a different pastime under a different tree each night. So that's why they stay under that tree. So there, what seems to us like immense tapas, imagine like you're in Vrindavan. Vrindavan also weather-wise is can be quite austere, right? In the winter, it's very cold. In the summer, it's very hot, right? And it's also like quite arid land. I mean, actually, no, to be fair, at that time, maybe it was more green. Vrindavan is now quite arid, I have to say, but externally, at least, externally. But they were literally sleeping under a different tree. And it might seem austere to us in the jungles, in the forest, with creepy crawlies and everything, and thorns and everything. But it's because they were in ecstatic trance, just looking at different pastimes. Isn't it? Wouldn't it be amazing for us to kind of get into that situation? We can actually experience that as well. Anyway, let's pause here and then we'll continue with the classes tomorrow. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagatam Ki. Jai.